It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, sponsored by Trenton Interiors. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Tonight's show on ESPN 97.7 is also brought to you by your 26 area local State Farm agents, Brister's Smokehouse, National Jewelry, Pierce Service Company, Brennan Dodge, Dairy Queen, and Gary Stokely, Keller Williams Realty, as well as hotline sponsor Fairway Cards. Now here's your host for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, Jonathan Ford.
Welcome back to a live edition of Bleed Tech Blue Radio, presented by Trenton Interiors in downtown Ruston. Give us a call on the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline, 888-993-7762, or text. I'm still getting used to that whole text line. Hotline or text line, 888-993-7762, or send us an email, radio@bleedtechblue.com, or if you're on the Twitters, @bleedtechblue. The Twin Towers of Radio are back.
Finally.
Jason Jones joining me here in studio. He joined me for our podcast-only edition last week, which was... It was pretty good.
Yeah, it went over pretty good. I liked it. But it's good to be back in the actual radio station.
Well, Jason, of course, we'll get right into it because that's how we do. We don't waste any time. Bulldogs coming off not a heartbreaking loss because they trailed from the word go to Western Kentucky. Lost by three. Scored a late touchdown to make it interesting. But overall thoughts on the game, you know, initially I thought, man, this team just got whipped. But whenever it's you never have the correct judgment immediately after a game. Do you have that same feeling?
Yeah, I mean, right after the game, you're just mad because they lost. But if you look at it, I mean, take away that first quarter where they were down 14-0, could have been down 21-0 because they fumbled the ball right there at the 1 yard line. I mean, Tech outscores them, what, 38-27 the last three quarters. The offense really got moving, and the defense, you know, improved a lot, held them to 14 points over in the second half after giving up 27 and really almost 34 in the first half. So the defense settled down, played a lot better, and you know, I think it was Blake Becker's first, you know, real challenge calling a defense. I don't think he'll face an offense like that all year, even against Kansas State or Mississippi State. That's going to be the best offense they face, especially with that passing attack.
And honestly, it wouldn't even be close.
Yeah. And, you know, on the road, short week, and, yeah, they jumped out on them. But, you know, they've circled that date for a year after getting blown out last year in Ruston. They were ready. And they came out blazing. And yeah, so Tech got kind of punched in the mouth a little bit, and they were kind of dazed. And it took them a minute to figure things out. But I tell you what, the poise of Jeff Driskel and that offense.
I wonder if he can be rattled at all.
Yeah, I don't think he can. He's just so smooth and calm and collected. And they started scoring points. It took them a little while, but they got going. And they put up 38 in the last three quarters. And, you know, Dixon. He's just – looking like he's shot out of a cannon every time he touches the ball.
And you look at the total stats. Western Kentucky finishes with, I mean, you couldn't use an abacus at this game. There were so many yards put up. Western Kentucky finishes with 590 total yards. Tech with 580. And Tech did that, like you said, in essentially three quarters.
Yeah, and Tech held them to 4 out of 13 on third down. They were 1 out of 1 on fourth down. And you know, Doty was 28-38, or Doughty, however you say it.
I heard both from all their fans.
Oh,
so.
Well, if they don't know, we don't have to know. And, you know, I mean, West Kentucky did have 10 penalties. That helped Tech a lot. They did lose that one fumble. But, you know, I felt like, you know, it was a really evenly played game. Tech was just a little bit behind the eight ball. They got in a hole and couldn't quite climb out of it.
Yeah, I don't think it's as bad as most of us initially reacted. Western Kentucky was a whole lot better than I thought they'd be. And I think you would agree with that statement that they were better than you thought they would be.
Yeah, after seeing them play in the first week, I didn't think their offense looked like crap against Vanderbilt. And so
maybe Vandy's defense is better than anybody's giving him credit for.
Yeah, and they probably are. He's a really good defensive coach. Their head coach is. But I did not expect West Kentucky to get it together. They were a little banged up at receiver. I felt like Tech was going to be able to get pressure on the ball. But that first quarter, they just were not able to put pressure on the quarterback.
And going back to looking at Vanderbilt, I mean, they did hold, quote-unquote, held Georgia to 31, which is a bit of a task.
Yeah, it really is, because they were pretty heavy underdog in that game.
Let's see, Nick Chubb for Georgia didn't even play. Yeah, he did. 19 carries, 189 yards. So he got his.
Yeah, you're not.
As the kids say,
you're not going to stop.
You're not going to slow down Nick Chubb. So I mean, Vanderbilt's offense is pretty good. I hate to see that Leon Allen, Western Kentucky's or WKU, that's what they prefer to be known as, WKU's running back is out for the season.
And then we just get news today that the UTEP running back's out for the season. So two of probably the top four running backs in the conference are out, leaving, of course, Dixon from Louisiana Tech and Johnson from Marshall being the lone, you know, two returners that are big names. But I think it was Aaron Jones.
Can't help but think about the UAB running back from a year ago. And then now the UAB news that they've signed Bill Clark to a contract extension, a 5-year contract extension, and they will begin play in 2017.
Yeah, but that running back's getting his fair share of the Conference USA play. He's at Indiana, beat FIU last week, and now they get to play Western Kentucky. So he's seeing a few Conference USA defenses, and I think he'll run pretty well against Western Kentucky's defense.
Of course, Tech gave up another kick return for a touchdown. That's probably one of the biggest concerns going forward. Yesterday during the press conference, Skip Holtz talked about how early in the game, because Tech's defense was out on the field for basically the entire first quarter, that Tech has a lot of starters playing special teams. And because they had played so many minutes, those guys went to the special teams coaches. Carl Scott, I think, does the kickoff return or kickoff coverage. And, of course, Bradford, who is the special teams coordinator, and said, hey, I need a breather. I'm dying here. So they allowed them to have a breather, and that's when the kick return for a touchdown came in. So,
well, Coach Holtz talks about his dirty dozen. He likes to get that special teams unit put together. So I wonder what that is. That made up of mostly starters, or is that a lot of second team guys?
There's both, and you're going to have some walk-ons. Like, I think that before the end of the year, Frazier Hogan's going to be a man amongst boys on special teams. And then this is kind of a segue, not really. Blake Martin has been a special teams star for years. It came out this week that he's got a bone that's broken in his hand. So does Jared Kraft. We noticed that neither one of them, they were both no-shows at the game. I think one of them played early. They both played early. And then
Dixon just kept going out there, and you're like, man, when's this guy going to get a breather?
Where's the other ones? So Boston Scott came in, and then Jacquees Dancy didn't play a whole lot of running back, but he's going to play a lot more on Saturday at running back, and that'll be interesting to see. Coach Holtz said that neither one of them can really carry the football, but you can play special teams as Blake Martin with a broken hand.
Yeah, he can. And then you've got Carlos Henderson that's had a cast on his hand. So just some really weird injuries for Tech.
And then at center, Joseph Brunson's had an ankle.
Wixon's
got a shoulder issue. I expect Brunson to be back this week. I'm not sure about Wixon. I would call him questionable.
Yeah, so if it's between Brunson or Mahaffey, who's starting at center, do you think?
I would say it's Brunson.
Really? Even though he hadn't played all year?
Probably Brunson. They'll give him a go, and if it doesn't work, they'll put Mahaffey in.
You think Dugas still starts at guard?
Probably not. If Mahaffey's able to go, especially in a Big 12 stadium, you're going to put a veteran in there.
Yeah, but I guess
they'll roll them. I mean,
Dugas and Carpenter in, but they'll probably start their veterans.
I can't remember a Tech offensive line that rolls like this one does.
Yeah.
You might have, like, Shane Carpenter played a lot of right tackle, but as Coach Holtz talked about yesterday in his press conference, Yens is playing really well. The only reason that Shane got the start is because of how much time Yens missed.
So you've got three tackles in Brown, Danielson, Carpenter, and now you've got really three players that could play either left guard or center, Brunson, Mahaffey, and Dugas, assuming Wixon's out, so you could see some rotation.
And Brunson can play right guard, too.
Yeah, so you could see some rotation between three players at two spots in a couple of different areas.
So, and that's a good thing. I feel in some of the – Coach talked about this. I mean, this is stuff that the average fan – and I didn't notice it because I watched most of the games from the end zone, which you're not going to see this as much as – how the defensive front for Western Kentucky was different than they expected. They ran a lot of odd man front and dropped eight guys in the coverage. So when you've got a guy that hasn't started a lot at center, and then he sees different fronts than he's expecting to see from film, you're going to have some issues. Now, he had some bad snaps late in the game, which is worrisome, but it still was his first start in ever, I think, at Tech at center.
Yeah, yeah. So
it can't get worse.
No, I think that was just a lack of experience, and so he's got that experience now, and it'll definitely get better.
Well, what do you expect going forward from Tech? Do you think they continue to give a heavy dose of Dixon? Do you think they'll start rolling more defensive backs in because of getting some more guys some experience? Kansas State's gonna throw the ball, and then just to preview a little bit of what we're gonna talk about in the show. Next segment, Mike Craven from birdsup.com, the UTSA rival site, he's the publisher, will join us. And then at 6:30, Tim Fitzgerald from GoPowerCat.com, longtime rivals.com publisher, will be joining us talking Kansas State. A very entertaining fella. I doubt he disappoints. Looking ahead a little bit to Kansas State, do you think they roll more of those younger corners and safeties in early?
Yeah, I mean, I was listening to you and Fox on the segment right before this, and I was like, you know, there's not much depth at safety because they're all playing linebacker now. They all moved up there, but they do have Cedric Cooper, and I'm not sure who the other backup safety is right now.
Kirkland McCullough.
So he's a walk-on, a young guy.
It was going to be James Jackson, and James Jackson had a hand injury right before the end of camp. So yeah.
And before that, it was Lloyd Grogan, but he's moved up to linebacker. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know if you'll see – I'm sure that you'll see a lot of Cooper. I don't know if you'll see a lot of McCullough. But then at corner, you know, they're going to have to play one of the young guys. I mean, just probably Ephraim Kitchen and play him some and get that rest for the starters. But and that's something you mentioned earlier. I want to ask Mike when he comes on the next segment. So Tech loses to Western Kentucky on the road by three. Preseason favorite team in the conference. You know, does Tech look like they're going to stack up pretty well in the West against anybody? They've got to go on the road to a few of these teams like UTEP and Rice. You know, Rice didn't play too bad at Texas. Can Rice – do they look like they can contend with Tech for the West, or is it Tech's to lose? Because I don't think Tech plays anybody near as tough as Western Kentucky on the road the rest of the season in conference.
Yeah, and if Tech plays like they did at Western Kentucky offensively, they should beat everybody.
Should.
Being the operative word.
Yeah.
I don't – UTSA does not concern me. Once again, they use a tight end. They've always used a tight end.
North Texas does not.
North Texas is terrible.
Southern Miss, they're going to be gunning for Tech, but it's in Ruston. I don't really see that as much of a threat.
Rice is I've been saying for a while that Rice is the toughest game in the West for Tech.
Yeah, and at UTEP was the second one, but they just lost their stud running back. So.
And he's their offense.
Yeah, so
he's their whole team.
At Rice is really Tech's biggest test left on the schedule in conference play.
Well, let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll talk with Mike Craven from birdsup.com, talk a little Conference USA football and a little Kansas State. We couldn't do this show without your 26 area local State Farm agent, Sam Brister's Smokehouse. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7, presented by title sponsor Trenton Interiors of downtown Ruston. Go see those guys for all your interior decorating needs. Jason Jones joining me here in the Scott's Catfish and Seafood Studios in Ruston. Let's go to the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline, 888-993-7762, and our friend Mike Craven. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good, guys. How are y'all?
Doing wonderful. Give us a quick synopsis of Conference USA football thus far?
To me, looking at it, I feel like it's a two-team race on both sides. Obviously, Western Kentucky and Marshall have to be the clear favorites in the East. Western Kentucky's offense is, you know, it's really good, obviously, and Marshall's replacing a quarterback, so they've gone through some struggles there. But I still think they're those two teams are the best two teams over there. And then in the Western Conference, I mean, you'd have to just consider Rice and Louisiana Tech the two teams to beat right now. I think the other ones are better than a lot of people are acting like they are, but I don't think they're ready to compete with Rice and Louisiana Tech throughout an actual conference year season.
Yeah, Mike, this is Jason. I really think UTEP was the other team that had a chance to be in that conversation. Tech had to go to El Paso this year, but then we get the news today that their running back's out for the season.
And that's huge. Aaron Jones may be the best player in this conference. I mean, there's some other guys that obviously have rights to talk about be in that discussion, but Aaron Jones is the real deal. I mean, that's a running back that changes the team completely. And UTEP's a running team, so it's not like they lost their best wide receiver and they can rely on the running game. I mean, they ran the ball over 50 times a game last year, and Aaron Jones was a big part of that. So without him, it definitely drops them down. I feel like they were a little overrated going into the season just because, you know, they don't really have a quarterback that's proven anything. Their passing offense is pretty bad. So any team that could stop the run was going to have a chance against UTEP, but not having Aaron Jones obviously now makes UTEP towards the bottom of that discussion when we're talking about the Western Division.
Mike, UTSA is obviously your bread and butter. How do you explain this team? I mean, in week one, they give Arizona all they want on the road, come home, and K-State, who, I mean, they're a pretty good football team, don't get me wrong, but they replaced their quarterback his first start, and they come in there and drub the Roadrunners.
I think the first thing to remember is that Kansas State UTSA game was 3-0 in the Roadrunners' favor after the first quarter, and then they were only down 10-3 at halftime. So it wasn't something where Kentucky came out and put up 24 quick points in the first half and then coasted to a win. I think it was 16-3 or 13-3 going into the fourth quarter. So
okay.
UTSA was in that football game. They just couldn't run the ball. Kansas State's front six, front seven stopped the run and made UTSA one-dimensional. UTSA has a redshirt freshman quarterback, and this was kind of the first time everything was put on his shoulders in a home game in front of the fans. And like you said, after that Arizona loss, that was exciting. People were predicting a win or at least close to an upset against Kansas State. And so I think a combination of all those things really added up, and a lot of it's just youth on the offense, a lot of penalties. But they're a more talented team than they've ever been. Even though they lost all of those seniors were guys that were looking for an FBS program to play for.
Sure.
Going to play in the Southland or something like that. The guys that they have now are 2-3-star recruits that, you know, other people that are playing on this level gave offers to. So the talent is higher this year for UTSA. They're just young, and they'll be one of those teams that's better at the end of the season than they are right now, especially on offense.
Yeah, and we've definitely noticed over the last 2-3 years, you know, those Larry Coker teams, you go into San Antonio, you're going to have to be ready for a fight because the team competes the whole game. And I think you're right, Kansas State, I've got that game recorded, and I haven't been able to watch it yet. I'm going to watch it here in the next day or two, but it sounds like Kansas State was really in for a fight and just pulled away in the fourth quarter. Hey, I wanted to ask you, your quarterback, Blake Bogenschutz, is from right down the road from us, really, in Carthage, Texas, probably just an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes from here in Ruston. And then y'all just got a commitment, a defensive end, Jared McClendon from Carthage. Talk about Bogenschutz and his progression so far this season as a young quarterback, but also that kind of connection to the recruiting, that very extreme Northeast Texas region.
Obviously, East Texas is a place that everyone wants to recruit. You know, it's loaded with talent, and UTSA is no different. Having Bogenschutz there probably helped a little bit with the recruitment, but Carthage is a place you want to recruit. You know, there's certain schools that, you know, you want to recruit. You want to get guys out of there because they're used to winning, and, you know, they're obviously well-coached. As for Blake, you know, he's really good. He's a lot like UTSA's quarterback when it first started, Eric Sosa. He probably has a little bit better arm, and I think he's a little bit better mobily. But he's kind of, you know, we call him Eric Sosa 2.0 down here. And I think he'll get better. The issue for him is he's young. The offensive line is young. And so if there's no running game to balance it out, and all of a sudden you're forced to win with short underneath passes, and you play somebody coached by Bill Snyder, you're not going to look well. You know, he threw that first pick against Arizona on his first pass that got returned for a touchdown. And then after that, you know, UTSA outplayed Arizona for the rest of the game. So I think UTSA found their quarterback, and he'll be their quarterback for the next 4 years, you know, unless some injury or something like that happens. So I think UTSA should feel good about their quarterback position, if nothing else. You know, the kid's a winner. He won in high school. He's obviously competed really well, and he's had 4 starts, and 3 of them are against P5 teams. So he's seen really good talent, and I think he'll do really well once conference play comes around.
Mike, going a little bit to Kansas State, since you got to see him up close and personal Saturday, what do Tech fans have to expect, and how do you see the matchup kind of unfolding for Louisiana Tech and K-State?
I think the key against Kansas State's defense after watching them is being able to threaten downfield and keeping the safeties honest. UTSA wasn't really able to take any shots down the field. Kansas State was able to apply pressure with 4 and then drop 7 in a coverage and keep a 2-deep high safety look the whole time. So UTSA had to settle for underneath stuff. I think Blake had 20 completions for 157 yards. So, I mean, I'm not very good at math, but I think that's less than like 7 yards of completion. So Kansas State forces you to beat them. You're going to have to go on long drives. They stop the run. They force you to make plays on the outside against their cornerbacks, and then they swarm to the ball really well. So very rarely does a 4 or 5 yard catch turn into a 15, 20 yard catch. They don't miss tackles. They're a fundamentally good football team like they always are under Bill Snyder. So it'll be one of those things where Louisiana Tech, to win this game, is going to have to be secure with the football, understand that punting is an okay thing because the Kansas State offense isn't very good. And they just have to worry about time of possession, because the problem for UTSA, outside of not being able to score many points, was Kansas State had, I think, 40 minutes of the time. It was like 39 minutes and 55 seconds of the ball. So by the end of the game, UTSA was just worn out defensively.
Sure.
Kansas State's a power running team, so you want to keep your defense fresh and be able to go on some drives and have play ball security and good special teams, a good field position, and you're just going to have to win it fundamentally because Bill Snyder can really coach football.
Yeah, Tech's going to definitely have to switch in more players on defense than they did against Western Kentucky. They, you know, it's a different kind of offense, obviously, but they were really relying on those starters a lot, and you could tell they got winded.
And that's a big key. I mean, you in today's football, where people are running 60, 70, 80 plays, you have to have 8, 9, 10 deep on the defensive line, especially, because those big guys can't play 55, 60 snaps. They're not going to be able to rush the passer as well in the third and fourth quarter. Those blocks that they were getting off to stop the run for 2, 3 yards in the first quarter become 6, 7 yards in the fourth quarter, and then all of a sudden a team pops a long one. So having depth along the defensive line in modern-day college football is more important than it's ever been because of the style of play. When you face a big smash-mouth team like Kansas State, if you're asked to be on the field for 40 minutes in a game, you're going to wear down, especially if you're a Conference USA type opponent with quote-unquote lesser talent than what a Kansas State should bring to the table. So, I think for Louisiana Tech, it's about ball control. It's about putting together long, sustained drives and avoiding mistakes, because Kansas State feeds off that.
Looking at the conference overall recruiting-wise, of course, Tech sitting in first place in the team rankings on Rivals.com with 16 total commits. How do you feel like UTSA's recruiting class is shaping up, and how many spots do they have available?
It's going along slow right now. Actually, since I took over the website for that 2013 recruiting class, this is about as slow and as silent as I've heard it. Obviously, last year kind of spoiled us with recruiting because, you know, they lost 36 seniors, so they had to fill up with JUCOs and sign a full 25 class. I think right now they're shooting for 18 to 22 in that range, you know, adding in attrition, some transfers. So I think they're shooting for that 18 to 22 range, but they're at 5 right now. And it's been a pretty slow process. But that's what UTSA does. They don't have the budget to recruit like some of the teams in Texas. So they kind of wait their turn in line, see where some of the guys are going, what schools are in the battle for which guys. And they pick their battles and go after the ones they think slip through the cracks. And, you know, I think they'll do that again this year. I think they've shown that they know how to get talent on the field, onto campus. Just a matter of developing them and letting them get older. And UTSA just hit a big bubble with that big senior class that started this program and were starters for 3 years. And they'll just have to slowly build those numbers back up, and they'll do it. They'll do it this year like they've done it the last couple of years.
So what is your opinion on the heavy junior college class? I mean, basically Southern Miss is leading that way this year in Conference USA. And then also touch on the fact that FIU and FAU may recruit like crazy, but it never seems to really come to fruition on the football field.
I think there's two ways of looking at it. I mean, obviously in an ideal world, you'd be able to recruit 18-year-old kids out of high school and have them in your system for a long time and then get to start them as sophomores, juniors, seniors after a redshirt year. But not everybody has the ability to do that. And the JUCO route can be your way of getting a player to a school that never would have gone there out of high school. Because a lot of these guys that you're seeing at the JUCO ranks now for 3-, 4-, even 5-star kids that either got in trouble or the grades weren't there, they needed a second chance, they go to JUCO, they prove themselves there, you know, they make their grades, they get back on track, and a team takes a chance on them. And that's a quick way to fix your football team. You know, Kansas State, you know, not to go back to them, but Kansas State, Bill Snyder's made a career off of that. You know,
yes,
you never
has.
Know what you're getting with Kansas State every single season because half their team's new every year. And he does that because he knows he can't recruit with Texas and Oklahoma and Nebraska. So he goes to JUCO to get those kids he can't get when they're 18 because they're on their second or third chance. And he's made it work. And, you know, there's going to be ones that blow up in your face because they went to JUCO usually for a reason. But if you can more often than not hit the dice on that, what's losing 2 or 3 guys to trouble if you can get 6 or 7 that hit? And I'm perfectly fine with it. I think ideally you'd want to go straight high school. But, you know, you need to plug in JUCOs, especially offensive and defensive line, where you need guys to come in and play right away, and high school kids just aren't physically ready to do that for the most part.
And, you know, Mike,
when
you look at Kansas State, they've got a very significant JUCO system. And then you look at Mississippi with Southern Miss, and Mississippi has the same situation with lots of junior colleges and a very good junior college system. So those two places can and do lean on the junior colleges because, well, simply they can.
Yeah, the Jayhawk Conference up there is really talented. That's where Louisiana Tech found Quentin Patton, but players from all over the country go there because they know it's a good conference, and then they turn around and it gets recruited.
And O lineman and D lineman go to Mississippi to play in that Mississippi Junior College League because that's where the SEC recruits O line and D lineman that they need.
Yep.
Well, Mike, what's that?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Hey, I had one more question, Mike. I was looking at your schedule. So the four bigger schools, I mean, Colorado State's in the Mountain West. They're not a P5 school or anything, but open up with four pretty big-time programs, and then the next four games or conference games, three of them are on the road. The fourth one is Louisiana Tech coming into San Antonio. I mean, it looks like a pretty tough schedule for a rebuilding team. Do the fans like playing Arizona, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, all these bigger schools, or would you rather see having a home game against an FCS, try to get a team to warm up against?
I think it's mixed. I think you want a game or two on the schedule that gets national attention, and you know you're able to play, you know, Thursday night on the Pac-12 network against no competition. You know, you have the 11 o'clock game on FS1. And so I think the fans like seeing those games. But, yeah, they'd like to see a game or two out of conference that you win because they're smart enough to realize that if you can get 2 out of conference wins, it makes it easier to get bowl eligible. But UTSA was put in a spot where they thought they were going to be independent for this first 5 or 6 years. They didn't know Conference USA was going to come so quickly and hard to get them into the conference. So they set up a lot of these games before they were even practicing football, or that first year where all they were doing practicing and not playing in games. So they had to make a certain amount of games at the P5 FBS level to qualify to be independent and to get bowl eligible. So they're in these contracts for a reason, and as those contracts expire, you'll see more of them scheduling. Texas State's on the schedule in the future, and Georgia State, I think, is also on the schedule in the future. So you'll see UTSA balance it out. Just right now, they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place because, one, they needed the money, and, two, they needed to make this schedule before they even knew that they were playing conference football.
Well, Tech definitely feels you because Tech was in the same boat in the early days of the WAC, playing 4 P5s a lot of times, at least 3 most of the time.
It's brutal. Well, Mike, we really appreciate you joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. We'll have to do it sometime soon.
Of course, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Thanks, Mike. Mike Craven for birdsup.com, UTSARivals.com site. He's the publisher, knows all things UTSA. Thanks to National Jewelry and Pierce Service Company here in Ruston for sponsoring Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Without them, this wouldn't be happening. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com and host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jason Jones joining me here in studio. Let's go to the Fairway Carts of Minden hotline. with he's kind of a legend amongst Rivals.com publishers, and I'm very excited to talk to him, Tim Fitzgerald with GoPowerCat.com. How's it going, Fitz?
You know, there's different levels of legend. I'm not sure my legendary status is necessarily in a good way.
I would disagree.
Okay, that's good. That's good. I like it.
Well, tell
sure
her.
My mom would.
I'm not so sure your mom would. That's probably a fair statement. But the good thing is your mom isn't in Ruston, Louisiana. She's not listening to this show.
No, that's true. That's true. I hope she's not. Mom, what are you up to? What are you doing there?
Well, Fitz, today was Coach Snyder's press conference, correct?
Yes, it was.
Well, give us a quick recap of what he, from a Louisiana Tech perspective, what he talked about.
He was very complimentary of the Bulldogs and very vague about everything dealing with his own team.
Is that pretty typical?
Yeah, it is. Particularly before a game that he really has respect for the opponent. The better the opponent is, the more vague he gets about his own team and the more dry he gets. So to completely avoid any bulletin board material. So I think his team's on schedule. This is a rebuilding project for his program this year. They really don't return anything of substance on offense, and you know, they had someone, you know, earn the quarterback job pretty convincingly in fall camp, and he blows out his knee on the first play of the year. So you know, they're even reinventing themselves around the guy that was supposed to be the backup quarterback. So you know, it's just one of those years where he kind of needed to play a South Dakota and a Texas San Antonio to start off with before he got to a much more significant test in Louisiana Tech.
You know, would it be fair to say this is probably the understatement of the day, that Tech's the best offense that K-State's faced all year?
Yeah, you know, San Antonio really shocked people in their opener. They went down to Arizona and put up, you know, 32 points and, you know, 500-plus yards and ran 95 plays because they've gone to a high-speed spread offense. K-State really bottled them up, kept them to the three and only ran about 62 plays. But there's no doubting that Tech, in terms of actual viable offensive weapons and maybe maturity and knowing what they want to do, is by far the most substantial test of the three. I mean, South Dakota doesn't even count. They're struggling at the FCS level right now. So this is a serious step up for this K-State defense that has only given up 3 points through eight quarters, which is, that's impressive against anyone, but this is a much more significant challenge.
What's a matchup that you see Louisiana Tech having a little bit of an edge at in this football game?
Well, you know, I haven't spent a ton of time studying it quite yet, but, you know, just the fact that K-State's first thing they always address, Bill Snyder does defensively, is taking away the run game, and that's not easy to do with Kenneth Dixon. I mean, the dude can run the ball. And that's really, I think, what Tech needs to stick to and try to accomplish early on, because that'll shake loose the passing game even more for Driscoll. So I think K-State's going to be really focused on anyone running the ball, trying to take that away. That's what Bill Snyder really wants to do. I don't know enough right now about K-State's offense, what they're going to try to bring to the table. They have won two games comfortably and still really haven't established anything of substance on the offensive side of the ball. Joe Huebner, the quarterback, his numbers have been okay, not great. You know, their starting running back's been ineffective. They've got a couple redshirt freshmen coming off the bench that haven't earned the full trust of Bill Snyder, that are much better. Their receivers have been dropping passes. It's been interesting. K-State's still got a lot to work through on their own end, so there's a reason for concern here.
Can the new quarterback, can he throw the ball decently?
He can throw it a mile. He can't throw it 20 feet, if that makes sense. He has real problems in the short passing game. But, boy, if you want to stretch the field, Joe Huebner, his nickname is Bazooka Joe, can get it downfield, and he's put it on the money to a lot of receivers that have already dropped the ball. And, he found some other guys on Saturday at San Antonio that did haul in the ball, and it makes a big difference for him. But man, you know, he would throw those little outs or a little screen pass, and the receiver had no chance to catch it. It was either over the head or at the feet. It's something he really needs to work on. He's a big, powerful runner at 6'5", maybe a little bit too upright as a runner, but K-State is really kind of basing everything right now around the power offense, running the ball, and maybe stretching the field with the long ball, and he can do both of those things.
When you look at the line from Vegas, it's moved just a little bit. I mean, I think it's sitting around 9.5. Do you think that's a fair number?
Honestly, I thought it was a hair low. I've learned a long time ago, you don't second guess Vegas. On a game where you don't expect a lot of money to be bet, you know, people, lines are meant to split the money. They're not really meant to be a prediction of the outcome. They're trying to split the money evenly so they get paid. But in a game like this, I don't think that's, you know, if it's Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, the line might not be as realistic. They're trying to balance the money. This is, I think, a real reflection of what they feel like the difference in this game is. And maybe at the end of the day, it is a 9-10 point game. We'll see. It's a really good environment, and 2 o'clock games are kind of, the ideal time for K-State fans, so to speak. So it's going to be a really fun environment in Manhattan.
Well, that's interesting, because here in Louisiana, of course, down in Baton Rouge and up here, people would prefer 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock kicks. So that's interesting that a mid-afternoon kick is more popular for a fan base.
I certainly know that some fans like the night games, but K-State draws from a wide swath of area, including about 5 hours away in western Kansas. So those people will wake up early and get in here for tailgating and get it done. And a 2 o'clock kick is kind of ideal for everyone to get in early enough, get in a little pregame warm-ups, if you know what I mean, and then get out and be able to get home or stay around town in Aggieville, the big bar district, and get in some postgame fun. So it's kind of the preferred time. You just don't get many of those anymore. It seems like you're either playing at night or you're playing in the morning anymore. There's just not much afternoon football, which is kind of sad.
Well, Fitz, I was looking on GoPowerCat.com today, and I saw your prediction for the UTSA game was pretty dang close. So,
on K-State score, yeah, I've been really close on K-State score both games. I missed on UTSA. K-State's defense surprised me. They really took the Roadrunners out of everything they were attempting to do, with the exception of a couple drives. I mean, UTSA only had the ball a little more than 9 minutes in the entire second half. I had 31-20, and it ended up being 30-3. So I gave them a little bit too much credit.
Well, so if you've been nailing the Kansas State score, why don't you try your hand at a prediction today?
Well, I think K-State will be in the same neighborhood. I think this is a 31-point type team. They've scored 34 in that opener against South Dakota, and they were really bland and, you know, didn't show much at all. And you know, having losing your quarterback on the first play of the game, he came out after two plays. Took them a while to get going. I think they'll be in that 31 range. What I haven't really sat down to study now is to look at how effective this La Tech offense is going to be against the K-State defense. It seems to be playing a little bit more aggressive style than K-State showed the last few years. So I haven't quite got a gauge on it yet.
Well, the over-under from Vegas at 50, you're saying 31. And with a line of 10.
Yeah.
30 to 20.
That would make sense. Yeah, that does make sense. And I can see that being the score. I really can. And, heck, I might just use that now. Thanks.
Hey, you're welcome.
The less thinking I have to do, the better I am.
I feel that way in life every day.
Yeah, I'm a lot smarter when I don't think.
There you go.
Well, hey, this is Jason Jones breaking into the conversation here. Since we are both Rivals.com, people, I thought I would ask you about Kansas State and Bill Snyder are very famous for recruiting junior college players. You've got a really good conference, the Jayhawk Conference up there in state to choose from. But I was looking, you know, 2014, there's 10 commitments from junior college ranks. And then 2015, it looks like there was only two signees, and they were from out of state, Texas and Arizona. And then this year, I don't see any commitments. Is he kind of moving more towards the high school model?
Yep, he is. He is. It's a good catch. You know, if you go way back into the, you know, 90s, he arrived in Manhattan in 89 and soon after started hitting the junior college ranks. It was taboo back then. You did not recruit junior college players. They were tainted. You know, they weren't smart enough or good enough. There's a reason why they're in junior college. You can't possibly win with junior college players. And he showed that you can. I mean, in 1998, in 97, they recruited a group of core players, including Michael Bishop at quarterback, and they came within probably one play of playing for a national championship with, you know, the heart and soul of that team being JUCO players. And since that day, everyone's kind of picked up the pace of recruiting. Now you see the SEC heavily invested across the board, not just a few schools, but everyone's going into the JUCO ranks. The Jayhawk Conference has turned into really an SEC recruiting ground, and the fact that they're putting players, you know, placing them and then getting them back after a couple years. And Bill Snyder's noticed that it's really so much more competitive now for the elite JUCO players that he was getting, and sometimes getting late in the game. That doesn't work that way anymore. And Casey has had such great success in his second rendition here in Manhattan of developing young players. You know, a significant number of the key players on last year's team were fifth-year players that were former walk-ons. So they came into the program. Joe Huber, the quarterback right now, is a walk-on. Justin Silman, the young man that probably should be the starting running back as a redshirt freshman, is a walk-on. And they've really done an incredible job of identifying high school talent that everyone else misses, whether they're a three-star or a no-star recruit, and turning them into really good players. And I think this guy is just a long answer, I'm sorry, but I think this is an indication that Bill Snyder is stocking that cupboard. He's making sure that there isn't that influx of JUCO players that come and go and really make it hard to manage a roster for a new coach. Because he's 75, he turned 76 this season. He's not going to be around forever, and whether it's 1 year or three more years, he knows he wants to pass off the program in really good standing. And he inherited his own program back from Ron Prince, and it was a disaster because of too heavy into the junior college recruiting. You can go too far with it, and you get your numbers way out of whack, and it's just hard to fix. And they had to fix it through a walk-on program. And I think he's trying to get the program ready to pass off. And this year, we're seeing a lot of freshmen on the field, something that hasn't happened in Manhattan because they've had JUCO players in the wings ready to go.
Well, Tim, really appreciate you joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Great as always, and tell everybody where they can follow you on Twitter.
Well, the fun account is Life of Fitz. I actually have another work account. I won't bore you with the boring Fitz. Life of Fitz is sports and nonsense. We'll just say it that way.
Other.
Other. The kind of stuff that if I didn't own my own company, I'd probably be unemployed.
That's a fair point, but it is entertaining nonetheless.
Yes, I take a different approach to Twitter. If you can't laugh at yourself in the world, then you probably aren't getting it. You're not having fun in life.
There you go. Fitz, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, boys. It was fun.
Tim Fitzgerald from GoPowerCat.com joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Go do yourself a favor. If you're on the Twitters, go follow Life of Fitz. You'll thank me later. And if you blush easily, you will blush. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Trenton Interiors here on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com and host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Bleed Tech Blue brought to you by Brennan Dodge and Dairy Queen. Couldn't do it without those guys. And Gary Stokely, Keller Williams Realty. You just heard his ad right before we came back. Good fella. Loves him some Louisiana Tech. Jason, Tim was one of the best interviews we've had on Bleed Tech Blue Radio in history.
Oh, yeah. He was really good, and he knows his team, and he's not afraid to make a little fun of the whole situation. He's not just so numbers, or stats or whatever. He's definitely has fun with it, which is good.
And I found that interesting that he what he said about Coach Snyder at the press conferences, it sounds like to make it to for brevity, if he's halfway worried about a team, he's vague, and talks the other team up. If he's not, he's not so vague. I found that interesting because I tweeted this out after week one, whenever Tech was about to face Southern. Every coach on Monday or Tuesday, whatever, at their weekly press conference is acts like they're playing the 85 Bears.
Well, and the master of that was Lou Holtz. I mean, he's just known for, I mean, Purdue was like loaded with all Americans. They were scoring 50 points a game, just going to kill everybody. And then, you know, Notre Dame would wipe the floor with them. So,
you think Skip might have learned it from somebody?
I think so.
But that's, I thought that was very, very interesting from a Tech perspective, that Snyder was complimentary. And he was. And there's, we have the whole transcript copied and pasted for our subscribers on BleedTechBlue.com. Go check it out. But Kenneth Dixon will be leaned on early and often.
Yeah, and that's the big matchup right there. I mean, they held San Antonio to 37 yards rushing. San Antonio doesn't have Kenneth Dixon.
They've never been able to run the football.
But they held them to 37 yards rushing, and they beat them in time of possession 35 minutes to 25 minutes. So that's, to me, a big deal for Louisiana Tech to establish that run. And that's what Tim said. You know, Tech's got to try to run Dixon, establish Dixon, and not get away from that, because that will open up the rest of the offense. But, you know, Tech, as far as time of possession, was even with Western Kentucky, 30-30. Now, I know Western Kentucky passes a lot, so they're not going to run a lot of clock. But, you know, rushing yards, Tech was able to put up 223 against Western Kentucky. So that's the give or take right there. It's the big rushing attack from Louisiana Tech and the good tackling, fundamentally sound Big 12 defense, Kansas State, trying to stop the run.
And if Tech's able to get back Kirby Wixon for Saturday's game, right at the point of attack, you can move Mahaffey back to left guard or leave Dugas there as the road grader, as big as Dugas is at 6'5", 330. That's good. Josh Robinson is a road grader at right guard, so you got some big guys to run behind on the offensive line. But the thing about K-State's in the trenches is they're veteran-laden. You see seniors with 3 years of experience all up and down their offensive line for sure. So that's hard to match. Luckily, Tech's got a couple of seniors on its defensive line to match them, but you know they're going to double team Vernon every snap. Aaron Brown will be back Saturday, who was serving a two-game suspension. One point of interest for me is going to be, does
Carlos Henderson.
No, fullback from Houghton. Just completely escaped me.
Marlon Seats. You said Marlon.
I said Marlon. I was right. Halfway. With Marlon Seats will be back. I think he's also serving a little bit of a suspension. So if he's back, that helps the running game as well. He's a very good blocker. I think they're going to run with that. We might see that heavy set a good bit Saturday against Kansas State. Now, I hope that they get a little bit more inventive, because they normally run left. Isn't it left every time out of that T-bone package?
Yeah, seems like it. Kind of getting the line going and the train moving in one direction, and there it goes. But, yeah, I mean, Kansas State on defense, not overly big.
No, they're not huge.
They've got a 290-pound redshirt freshman starting inside. He's only 6 foot tall. 6'4", 293 junior next to him. Their ends are 240 and 250. No seniors starting.
So it's just
the
offensive line with the veteran laden.
Yeah, the offensive line is a whole lot of juniors, and they're all, you know, 295 to 309. So they're all pretty good size. Now their center's a freshman that's 290, but he's got a redshirt junior right behind him. So according to Tim's website, their guards and tackles are all right there around 6'4", 300. So very similar in size, but they are experienced. And they'll have a big 6'4", 237 tight end out there as well.
And they're built for the running game. Those guys are low to the ground, low center of gravity, but big fellas. So they're built for the running game.
But, yeah, and on defense, you know, I think Tech's bigger than them on defense. They'll start only two linebackers weighing 223 and 210, a freshman and a sophomore. They've got five defensive backs, two juniors, juniors, a sophomore and a freshman.
Now, their corners, one of their corners is big at 6'1", 205, Danzel McDaniel. And then the other one, Morgan Burns, is 5'11", 195, which is about average for a corner.
But when you got a 205 corner and he's your heaviest out of five defensive backs, that's pretty lightweight. It really is. Their safeties are both, you know, 186 and 195, and their nickels 180.
This matchup is pretty good for Tech. I mean, I said this.
Tech should be able to run the ball on them.
Two weeks ago, I said this about UTSA after their or before their game against Arizona. They match up well against certain teams. Spread teams are one of those teams that UTSA matches up well against. But Kansas State was not. They're a power team. So if Tech can dig deep and find, they're not, they can be a power team, but they're more of a balanced attack is what Tech's offense is. So that'll be interesting to see what happens, which Tech team shows up. Will it be power? Will it be finesse? Will it be balanced? What happens? So I'm very curious to see what happens Saturday in Manhattan, Kansas, in the Little Apple.
Yeah. And they only scored, two touchdowns against Kansas State. Oh, I'm sorry. They did have three rushing touchdowns. They had three field goals as well. So I think they lead. They're one of the nation's leaders in kicking. Kansas State is struggling to capitalize on their red zone opportunities. And their quarterback's only 12 out of 23 against San Antonio. So he's barely over 50%.
Their kick returner's good. That's a concern.
Yeah. Now, obviously,
Morgan Burns, a corner.
When you talk about key matchups, it's Tech's rushing game against their defense, number one. But number two is special teams. Tech has got to clean that up somehow, because that was the difference in the Western Kentucky game. It really was. You lose by three. If that one kickoff return doesn't happen, Tech wins the game. Probably. It was obviously the point spread. I mean, Tech would have been up by four. So Kansas State, you know, if you're talking about a 10-point, not a 10-point spread, you know, and you give a couple points for home field, really one special teams touchdown could swing the game in Kansas State's favor.
If you're Louisiana Tech defensively, knowing that Huebner is – his strength is the deep ball, do you put X as a single high safety and say don't get beat deep and just – play center field?
I think so. I think you have a center fielder, and I think you bring the heat. You get to him however you can and try to make him uncomfortable, just like they did to Western Kentucky last year and a lot of teams last year.
Or like they did to Western Kentucky late in the game Saturday. It was just too little too late.
Yeah. I mean, if they can get to him, he's not experienced at quarterback. And like Tim said, he's not very efficient in the mid-level throws. If you make him make quick decisions, he might not have time to wait on that deep route. He might have to check down to something else, and he might make a mistake. So if you can't get to him, he can sit back there for 3, 4, 5 seconds and unleash one. Yeah, you might be in trouble, but I think Tech has to take that risk. That's what they did last year. You might give up a touchdown or two, but if you can hold them down to 24 or less points, I think Tech wins the game.
Well, that's it for a little K-State talk. We'll give our predictions in the final segment. Next segment, little recruiting, the nitty-gritty of BleedTechBlue.com. That's kind of what we're known for at Rivals.com is our recruiting. And Jason Jones is the recruiting analyst for BleedTechBlue.com. We'll talk a little tech recruiting after the break. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Jay Ford, that's me. Publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, Jason Jones, recruiting analyst for BleedTechBlue.com. Joining me, we're going to talk a little tech recruiting. Jason's got the conference and the national rankings pulled up on Rivals.com. Where does Tech rank nationally, Jason, for this 2016 class?
Well, it's not right where you would really want to be. You know, you're hoping Tech's going to move into that top 50, and I think there's still a chance to do that. But when you look at the company they're around, it makes you feel pretty good. I mean, 53, Oklahoma.
Tech sitting at 56.
54, Texas. 56 is where Tech is, but then right behind them, North Carolina State, Boise State. So, you know, it's a pretty good company right around the Bulldogs. So, I think I will take 56 all day long. And then in the conference, number one, and nobody else is really close. FIU is number two, but they have 23 commitments, so their average per commitment is not very high. And then nobody else was within a couple hundred points. So,
and Kansas State sitting at 69.
Yeah, so, I mean, we just talked to their Rivals guy, and he was saying how they're having to recruit more high school guys. They're trying to pass off the program to a younger coach in the near
he
future.
Thinks.
You know, yeah, I mean, Snyder can't live forever. Maybe he'll coach till he's 80. Maybe he'll try to do, you know, Bobby Bowden
or
something.
Which is crazy to hear,
isn't it? Yeah, or Paterno. But, you know, they're recruiting nationally. They've only got 11 commitments, though. I mean, they do have a 2.7 star average. And, you know, Georgia Tech.
And 1 4 star.
Georgia Tech, Pittsburgh, they're behind Tech right now, but they only have 9 or 10, 11 commitments. So they'll move up. But then again, you've got some people like SMU with 21 commitments ahead of Tech and Wake Forest with 20 that I think Tech could still catch.
And you look at the conference, Tech's way out in front. With 16 commitments, Tech's got 5 3 stars with an average of 2.31 for the star ranking at 780 points in the Rivals rankings. So with FIU at 750 points, but they have 23 commitments, so that's kind of got their numbers skewed. Number three is Rice with 17 commitments, and Tech is, 180 points away from them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, 210. So
210 points. I'm good at math, can't you tell?
So, like, Western Kentucky, Marshall, Rice, they've got decent classes, but they just don't have those three-star, you know, headliners leading the way that Tech has. And so that's where this end zone facility is really paying dividends. You had 2 3-star commitments here in the last couple of weeks. Willie Baker from Livonia that had all the offers from all over the country, NC State, Michigan, Mississippi, and then the bigger offers – to me, we're Tennessee and Texas A&M.
If this class holds true, I mean, they're gonna lose somebody. I mean, let's just be honest. The likelihood of them holding on to all 16 come signing day in February is not likely. And you to add on to these guys, you add Jarrell Jackson, transfer from Hawaii, who they still haven't announced him formally, which is interesting to me, and he's in school, and Ronald Lewis from Arizona State. Another corner. So two corners are transferring in. That's Ronald Lewis was in the two deep of Arizona State, but he's a New Orleans native, wanted to get closer to home. So he transfers back to Tech.
And the number 27 player in the state back in the 2013 class, you know, a 3-star kid.
Lots of offers. Click that see more. Or more.
Yeah, I mean, 5.7 rated and head offers Baylor, Colorado. Obviously, he signed with Arizona State, Illinois, the Mississippi Twins, Nebraska, TCU, Texas A&M. So he's a very similar type recruit to what Baker was now. And then they also, the most recent commitment is, you know, Fondle from down in New Iberia, and he's got offers from the Mississippi Twins. So, or actually the Mississippi Trifecta, and he's an offensive lineman.
The Mississippi Trifecta.
So, you know, Tech's getting these big 3-star headliners, but, you know, and the first two were Arkansas kids. Keandre Thomas from Fort Smith and David Beasley from Pine Bluff. And Thomas, you know, the cornerback, 6 foot, 170, has a Mississippi State offer to go along with Minnesota and Tulsa. So he's getting a lot of attention, very fast, the individual. And that's the one that you want to keep your eye on. You talk about the bigger schools are going to come in. Arkansas does this to their in-state players every year. They don't offer them. They don't offer them. They bring them to all the camps. They bring them on all the games and the visits. Just keep flirt with them. They keep that carrot in front of them, and then they'll wait and see how they do nationally. And then if they need them, they'll try to offer them there in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And so, you know, it's going to be up to the player to decide, you know, do you want to be with the team that you've been committed to for the whole year, or this team that's been treating you as, you know, a second choice. And, you know, LSU's done it in the past too to in-state kids, and if those kids grow up wanting to play for those schools, it's hard on them, but that's the decision that they're going to have. But there's other three-star kids out there that are still available, and you know, Tech's in decent shape for a few of them.
You know, Jason, you look at this class for Louisiana Tech, four offensive linemen in the class, and really three of the four are interior linemen for sure. Cody Russi from Burleson, 6'3", 270, 280. He's probably a little bit heavier than 270 now. Kennedy Madison, same thing, 6'3", 280. Taylor Fondel, 6'3", 300. All three of those guys are interior offensive linemen. You could potentially play them at tackle, but you don't normally want to play a under 6'4" offensive lineman at tackle. They also have Alfred Beverly from Beaumont Westbrook at 6'5", 335.
That's a big boy. And he's actually got a teammate in Ennis Gaines that Tech recently offered, who's a UTSA commitment, a defensive back.
And then you look at defensive line. Tech's got two defensive ends committed. I'm not sure that they'll take another defensive end. I think that they'll probably take one more D tackle, whether that'll be Cameron Murray from Bryant.
Bryant, Arkansas, or John Tate from Pine Bluff.
And John Tate is listed as a D end on Rivals, but I think he's a tackle.
Yeah, he won't be one of the big 330-pound nose guards, but he'll end up being a 290-pound tackle.
He's
already 260.
Yeah. 255, 260 already.
Yeah.
It's hard to say that he's going to be a D end, but he can flat play the game of football. I believe one of those two will likely be a Bulldog. It's just a matter of which one it'll be. And if there's not, D tackles in this region aren't hard to find. There's a couple of big folks around in Mississippi, Louisiana, and Arkansas. I think those three states are probably the last three or top three in obesity. So there's a few big folks.
Yeah, and
to say the least.
And you know, there's some other big boys out there as far as their names. You know, Tate's from Pine Bluff. Tech's got a commitment from one of his teammates already.
David Beasley.
And then, you know, look at Nathaniel Evans, 235-pound linebacker from John Curtis. Tech's in the mix for him. A 205-pound linebacker, Nehemiah Augustus from Patterson. Tech's in the mix for him.
And let's not get people's hopes up. I don't.
Well, and then DeAndre Hardwick from Fort Smith, 240-pound inside linebacker, is a 2-star kid with a couple of good offers. You know, Evans and Augustus probably long shots, but when you're talking about you have 16 commitments and you're only going to sign 22 or 23, they're probably only going to take one more linebacker. So one of those three, they've got time to be picky.
Yeah.
And so if Augustus keeps waiting, you know, who knows? And we would have said the same thing about Willie Baker a month ago, and then all of a sudden he committed after seeing the new Davidson Athletics Complex. Coney Durr, Dutchtown, Tech's got some really good connections to Dutchtown.
And he visited for the Southern game.
And, you know, 4.4 in the 40, defensive back.
Another one.
Yeah. And then on offense, you know, Douglas Coleman from Zachary is in the mix. There's just an article in the NewOrleans.com recruiting talking about how he's playing defense too and doing really well on defense, so he might get recruited on both sides of the ball. So there's a lot of really good players.
So what would
there.
You say, Jason, is the biggest need for Tech to close out this class? If they Tech, we think that Tech will finish in the 20 to 22 range. So that there's 4 to 7 spots left.
Really, you know, you can see them taking one more defensive back, one more linebacker, one more defensive lineman. But they've
got offensive tackle.
They've got so many commitments from all those positions and from last year that I don't think missing out on any certain player at those positions is make or break. But when you look at no commitments at wide receiver, They do have Alfred Smith that transferred in. That's the one spot that they really need a big.
Oh, true. That's another transfer I hadn't talked about. But, yeah, Alfred Smith at slot receiver.
They do have a need for a wide receiver in this class, probably two or three. But that one.
Well, remember, they loaded up on receivers last year with Rashid Bonnet.
And Woodard. But then the third kid from Ravel didn't get qualified.
The tight end, yeah, Jamarion Johnson.
So I really think they'll go for two or three. The one big name that's out there, I mentioned – the kid from Zachary that can play either way, Douglas Coleman, 6'1", but Gerard Sanders from Bishop Dunn over in Texas, son of Glenn L. Sanders, who's a Tech legend, the leading tackler in the program's history. He spoke to the team at the Heart of Dallas Bowl. Sanders is basically down to Northwestern of the Big Ten and Louisiana Tech, and that's the kid that they need. Not the fastest guy in the world for 0.58 in the 40, but he's 6'2", and he can catch the ball. And
what's his weight?
He's 195, so he'll be over 200 pounds.
Yeah, it's a good weight. So he could play outside, but he's more than likely an interior receiver. Would be there with Cam McKnight. Who, yeah. Speaking of Cam McKnight, has had such a, with Connor Smith being out with an ankle, he's had a couple of good games.
Yeah, and he's got that opportunity.
I'll get that out. Sorry,
he's taking advantage of that opportunity and showing a little bit of what he's capable of.
Yeah, let's move to the break. And on the other side of the break, predictions on Tech, K-State from yours truly and Jason Jones. I think I learned a little bit from Fitz, and I've gotten mine ready. It's not going to be a shocker for anybody. And we're going to let Tabor continue to predict. None of us are very good at this, but dang it, is it fun. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jason, we got a promotion going on BleedTechBlue.com. Get half the season free. Now, of course, we're 2 weeks in. Half the season free at BleedTechBlue.com with the promo code HALF15FREE. All combined. Can't beat that deal.
Yeah, so you're still getting almost half the season free if you start today, but
right up to the week before, up to the Friday before the Mississippi State game.
Yeah, so a lot of good content on there, and you know, Tech's really killing it in recruiting. So you want to find out, you know, who all Tech's looking at and who might be visiting these upcoming home games. Got some big home games coming up, you know, with ULL coming to town, wanting some revenge. So you know, we'll see what kind of recruits show up, you know, and will Tech invite all the in-state recruits like Lafayette did last year for the game down there.
Yeah, that was interesting, and I don't. That's really not. It's not Holtz's style.
Oh no, it's not.
He'll bring in the kids that he's recruiting.
Yeah,
but he won't purposely go out and say, "Oh, you're committed to ULL. Come visit this game."
Yeah,
that's not his MO, as it were.
So the over under is around 50. I'm going over, and with my prediction, I'm just going to go a little bit over. I don't think Tech's going to get beat by 9 or 10 points. I really don't. I'm going to give the home team the advantage and go Kansas State 27, Louisiana Tech 24. That's 51 total points. Could be more than that. I'm hoping Tech can put up 4 more points and win it.
Well, it opened up at 51, so you're right on the money from where it – oh, it actually opened 55 with – at the Venetian, so
I think Tech can score in the 20s. The question is, you know, can the defense hold them to the low 20s, or will they get that special teams play? But I'm going to give Kansas State the advantage because they're at home and they're a veteran team, 27-24. But I really think this is a winnable game. I really do.
Dirt? Nobody called you dirt anymore.
It's funny that Jason mentioned that. I was thinking that earlier, 27-24. But I feel like the offensive, especially in the second half, are going to open it up a little more. I don't believe you'll see a whole lot of punts in the second half, probably more turnovers than punts. So I'm thinking 31-28 Tech.
I like it.
I always have to have somebody pick Tech. It makes for good radio, does it not?
Well, somebody's got to be a homer.
And you're the producer on the ones and a two, so you can be the homer. I'm sticking with some research from my boy Fitz. He said 30, and I said 20 for Tech, with the line being 9.5, 10. And I have never bet a penny of my money on Vegas. And you, whenever you listen to me talk about lines, you would think that I am the biggest bettor in Ruston, but I just believe those mathematicians in Vegas.
Well, and you know, I'm gonna hang my hat on the first prediction we ever made on this show, 2008. It's been a long time. Mississippi State came to town, and I picked Tech to win, and I got the score within 1 point.
Have you been that close since?
Never. So I'm hanging my hat on my first one. Forget my record since that. So hopefully I'm wrong this time too.
So I two for Kansas State to win, one for Tech to win.
And you're going 30-20, which we've seen that they're kicking a lot of field goals, so 30 would mean basically what they've been doing, about 3 touchdowns and about 3 field goals. And if things go like it has been going for both teams, one of those touchdowns probably could come on special teams. Hopefully it won't.
Yeah, special teams.
Because what were you telling me? They're averaging per kick return. I mean, it's some crazy number.
A skip said like 50.
Yeah. So, yikes.
I would squib it every time.
Yeah, definitely.
Every time. Why would you kick to the guy?
Well, I mean, do like on the Adam Sandler movie and just find the guy that's kind of in the middle of the field that's not used to handling the ball and squib it to him. Do not kick it deep at all.
Sky high it.
Yeah, or just kick it a mile in the air and let it go 30 yards. Who cares?
As long as it's not on the other side of the 50, if it's 40 or towards the 40 or less, if it's inside the 40, Tech fans should feel good. And that's sad. And maybe Tech will surprise us, and they'll K-State will average starting field position of the 30. If that happens, I feel really good about Tech winning.
Inside the 35, I'm good. I really am. So we'll take it.
And the punting game for Tech has improved dramatically, I should probably say.
Yeah.
And really, Jonathan Barnes is kicking the ball well. That's what's so weird about
the kick coverage. They've probably been working on that all offseason, the kicking and the punting, and they have improved dramatically, which is good. So now it's time to work on
for the coverage teams.
Yeah.
So this could be Tech's week. I like the matchup because anytime you're playing a team that's not great on offense that means they're allowing you to stick around.
This is the kind of matchups you want in your non-conference schedule, and Tech's figured that out over the last several years. No more are you seeing Tech playing Auburn, Miami, and Texas A&M in the same season, or Tennessee and Florida, or whoever it was.
And if Tech is playing Texas in, what is it, 2017? Which, I don't love that game, but right now it's the only money game on the schedule. If it stays that way, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, or even if the second one is a some kind of, you know, Purdue, Illinois type team, Virginia,
Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the second one, hey, more power to it. Now, if the second one ends up being Alabama or Auburn, ugh. But, you know, Tech started the last probably 4 years playing Ole Miss and Mississippi State 1 year, the next year Virginia and Illinois, and beating them both. Almost, they did beat Ole Miss too the year before. And then, you know, the next year having Kansas and NC State. NC State, first game of the year, didn't turn out so well, but Kansas was winnable and should have been won. And I think these two games this year are winnable, and I think Tech's figured that out as far as the scheduling. Don't go chasing the dollars and take the highest bidder and go to some top 15 powerhouse in front of 100,000 fans. Find somebody that's paying, you know, maybe a couple hundred thousand less, but you can actually have a chance to beat them, and maybe they're ranked in the top 40 instead of the top 15.
Speaking of Texas, did you see that Patterson, the AD, was fired today?
Yeah, and so they're in a lot of turmoil, and so maybe this signing with Texas for 2017 is going to be the year. We've had horrible luck.
Or if it gets bought out.
Yeah, Texas had horrible luck and several years ago signing contracts with these teams, and the 1 year that they happen to be really good, that's when Tech plays them, 2007 at Kansas. Or even more recently, Auburn was bad 1 year. The next year, they're great. beats Tech, and then this year there looks like they're going back down again. So that was last year. So had some bad luck before, but at the, on the other hand, you know, Illinois and Virginia, Ole Miss with Houston Nutt already fired, those are some pretty good. The odds have been turning more in Tech's favor.
I wouldn't even, and
it's a gamble when you sign these games out 6-7 years in it.
Play yeah. Duke, play Wake Forest, play. They have Baylor on the schedule, but Baylor's really good right now. But
half the teams in the Big Ten.
But the some of the stuff with Art Briles right now at Baylor. That's
who knows what that's going to be in a few years. So you're taking a gamble. You really are, but odds are
Colorado. I can see him playing Colorado.
The Arizonas of the world, Iowa State, you know, any of those teams. But I like
the Washington State.
Oh, yeah. I like the two this year, and who knows what Texas will be in 2017. And I think odds are Baylor in 5 or 6 years won't be a top 10 powerhouse like they are now. It's just too hard to stay at the top for that long.
For Jason Jones, John Tabor on the ones and the twos, I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com. Don't forget, promotion going on at BleedTechBlue.com right now. Half of the 2015 season free with the promo code HALF15FREE. HALF15FREE. All one word. No spaces. We'll see you at the same time next week right here on ESPN Radio 97.7. This was Bleed Tech Blue Radio brought to you by Trenton Interiors of Ruston. See you next time. Let's go!
Listen for Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by Trenton Interiors, every Tuesday, 6 to 7:30 p.m. Go deep inside Tech football, basketball, and recruiting with your host, Jonathan Ford. Our show is also brought to you by your 26 area local State Farm agents, Brister's Smokehouse, National Jewelry, Pierce Service Company, Brennan Dodge, Dairy Queen, and Gary Stokely, Keller Williams Realty, as well as your hotline sponsor, Fairway Cards. Thanks for listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN 97.7.